Hello and welcome to another episode of the Scratchcast Interviews. This time round, we have the distinct pleasure of chatting with Edinburgh-based musician Fiona Liddle. How are you doing, Fiona?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Good. It's nice to see you. So the way we always kick these off is just by asking our guests to introduce themselves and tell us. So just to get you to tell everyone a little bit about yourself. So who you are and what your music is all about. So if you could just give us a little summary of that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I'm Fiona. I'm a vocalist, violinist, and songwriter based in Edinburgh, and I also do a lot in the Scottish music scene with promoting other Scottish artists and some charity stuff as well for women in music. And my music is kind of a bunch of stuff right now. It's mainly... The thing people most know me for is probably the Geffergeist band, which is me and a producer, Neil Ray, doing sort of atmospheric electronic poppy stuff. I've also got an album of acoustic stuff, just with me singing in a piano on Spotify as well. And in the meantime, there's loads of other genres kicking about in the background. I've not really settled on anything yet, like concrete.
So we kind of was first introduced to your music by way of the collaboration that you did with Jack Hinks on his track Jigsaw, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a wee bit more about how that came about. And did Jack kind of approach you with a kind of specific vision in mind, or were you pretty much just given free rein?
Well, me and Jack, we go back. We've been doing music together for about 5 or 6 years at this point. So we've been gigging and doing music together fairly regularly. Jack had a rock band about 5 years ago that I joined, and as bands do, you know, slowly it just like started dissipating. People had other stuff they wanted to do, and then Jack and I started to do stuff just the two of us, really, for acoustic gigs, because, well, it's much easier to just carry like two instruments to a gig and plug in than it is to carry like a drum set and everything else. So we started doing that about 3 years ago, and then whenever Jack has an idea for like a single, so Jigsaw, that he wrote that, I think, about 4 years ago. We were on tour down in Hackney. It was somewhere near London, I think. We were on tour with a group called Loud Poets, and we were just jamming the song in like the stairwell of this lovely big Airbnb we were in. And the core part of the song that I brought to it was probably the dual harmonies the whole way through. So we just started with that. And I'm terrible at learning lyrics, so a lot of it was just going round and me making up words until I got it right, basically, just going round and round it. And then when he wanted to do the single, we got in musicians from our wedding band called The Apollos, which Jack is now also. So it's all very incestual, basically. We're all in each other's bands. We all know each other. So we got in our bassist, Neil Ray, who's also the producer for Geffergeist, Ben Lobbin, who is called Rufus. His music, he releases music under that name, sorry. And Dave Hill, who's a drummer for a bunch of other Edinburgh projects as well. So we all did a couple of rehearsals and came together and made it the sort of weird, jazzy, rocky thing it's turned into now for the single, but there's also loads of acoustic versions kicking about for live gigs we've done as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So obviously kind of collaborating with other artists is quite a big part of your career then.
Yeah, I'd say so. I quite like making other people's stuff better rather than, you know, going, here's my stuff, if that makes sense. It's better to be the person sort of helping out. I think sometimes I spent about a good 10 years or so performing as like a member of a band rather than doing my own stuff. So yeah, I benefit from working with other people, I think, much more than just doing stuff myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How
easy is it to, because it sounds like you've got like, you know, fingers and quite a lot of eyes there.
Yeah.
Like, how easy is it to compartmentalize your work, if that makes sense? So like, is there ever an occasion where, for example, use Jack as an example, maybe an idea pops into your head when you're working with Jack and you think, oh well, actually that's maybe a bit better suited to maybe somebody else's work?
Yeah, I guess when you're working with other people, for me, I can suggest ideas and that kind of thing to them to make their song sound however I can do it, but when it comes to writing my own stuff, it's much more of a sort of isolated experience. So like, I don't really ask people for that much feedback unless I'm working. So if I'm working with somebody else, they've got a specific idea in mind and I can bring little highlights to it. I don't tend to write songs directly with other people. So like, my ideas are kind of mine and then I can add little like harmonies or little riffs or melodies on the violin to somebody else's stuff. And that's quite easy for me to do. And if I like a riff on someone else's song, I can just go, well, I'll rework that for maybe one of mine eventually. And then because I've got so much collaboration stuff on, I never really get around to it. But they're all in there, just somewhere, just not being used, gathering dust.
Cool.
You know, you've mentioned quite a few things there. Were there any other collaborations you've done in particular that we should check out?
I've got a song out with an Edinburgh producer, a Scottish producer called Critical Mass. That'll be coming out at some point. I've just finished vocals for that. And there's obviously more Geffer Guy stuff on the way. We're hoping to do an EP in sort of the end of summertime, hopefully releasing that, if we can record some stuff in the studio. That's the only two really at the moment. I do feature on Jack's new single, God, just like as a sort of ethereal ghost in the background singing really high notes. That's my job in this next one, so it's fairly easy for me to do. I think that's it at the moment. If I think of any more, this is where the compartmentalizing thing is probably a good thing to consider a bit fully. Yeah, the biggest collab I did this year was probably the Cover to Cover album, which was just bringing together like 13 artists to all work together on each other's music. That was probably the most overwhelming amount of like bodies and herding cats that I've done this year, probably. But it turned out really well, I think. So I think it was all worth it in the end.
Oh, absolutely. It was a fantastic album. We both really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we've just covered that on the last podcast episode, which I haven't finished editing, so isn't
all right.
It hasn't been released yet. So hopefully that'll be up soon. But that's on me to try and get that up and finished. So but yeah, like Grant said, yeah, we both loved it. We can talk a bit more about that in a little while, but you've obviously, you know, you've got all these projects on the go, but you're also very active in promoting Scottish music and artists with your Local Heroes playlist and your Shout Out Saturdays review videos that you do. What kind of drove you to start promoting Scottish music in that way? And how important do you think it is for artists to support their scene and help promote their peers?
It kind of started last year around summertime. I released the live album I mentioned before of my own stuff. And when I'm trying to promote that, that was like the first thing I'd released since I was about 14. So I had no idea what I'm doing. And I noticed this trend on like social media with Scottish musicians, or just, you know, UK musicians in general, just in all these little groups just posting their single and not really getting any engagement from each other. There was no real like feedback or any connections really being made. It was just kind of like, here's my shiny thing, and then everyone ignored it. And I thought, well, if musicians aren't even going to listen to each other's stuff, then who are we to ask, you know, everybody's aunt and uncle on Facebook to listen to it, basically. So I took that sort of lack of engagement and lack of actual like a network or a community that doesn't talk to each other isn't really a community, basically, is what I sort of went with. And I thought, cool, I can use my tiny corner of the void to try and, you know, promote Scottish music that I like and talk to the musicians as well and get them to talk to each other. So that's kind of where it came from. The first like playlist was just, I think, it's just a big mishmash of just every Scottish song that I liked at the moment, basically. And then as it's gone on, it's transformed to be like more up to date. So it's always music that comes out like the month before. I try to keep it relatively short, but I think this last one was like 40 songs. So it's like 3 hours long, which isn't great. And since starting it, I think I've met way more musicians this last year than I have done in like 10 years of gigging, because everyone's just, it's so instantaneous now. You can just like message somebody or mention them in a story and they're back like, thank you very much, I really appreciate that. And that didn't really happen at gigs. Everyone just kind of stands, if you're in Edinburgh anyway, the band's playing and everyone's like 3 feet back just sort of looking at them, and it's really awkward. Whereas on social media, it's much easier to actually connect with people. Even though you're not face to face, you can start, you know, sharing each other's music with each other or just working on stuff together. A number of collabs I've done is from just social media. I've never met half of these people, especially with Cover to Cover, I've never met any of them like in person. It was all done like just online, basically just via email and just sharing stuff. That's all it was. And the review thing was the same idea. I wanted to talk about why I like this stuff and why it's good and just give musicians that I review a bit of a lift, really, like, because it's kind of hard out there, especially if they, like, no one's listening to your stuff. It's for your mental health. It's pretty like, yeah, it can be a huge dip and you can just start doubting everything you do creatively and whether music's for you and should you be an accountant and all that stuff that we're all very familiar with. And I just wanted to bring some positivity to it and actually encourage them to talk to each other and encourage each other rather than just, you know, the void and you get nothing back, basically just an echo of your own voice saying, listen to my song. And, you know, I wanted to change that attitude, basically.
Yeah, I've seen that in, I'm in quite a few, like, because we cover like alternative music, I'm in quite a few of these Facebook groups, and you do see that people just, they just drop a link to their video or their song, and then there's really zero interaction on it. I mean, it's the same when we put a review in one of those groups, and there's not much interaction on that either. So it's a cool thing that you're doing. How does your, I mean, you also do this Line Check podcast with Jack Hinks again. Mm-hmm. How does that fit in with all of this stuff?
Well, Jack and I started that because we were kind of just used to seeing each other about 3 or 4 times a week at gigs, and we're really close friends. So it was kind of an excuse just to have like a weekly catch up, which I'm sure you guys use this podcast for. It's just fun to, I heard a bit of, I think a couple episodes back, you're talking about like lockdown haircuts. So that kind of stuff, it started like that. And then we thought, cool, we could probably use this to actually talk about how we've been promoting our music under lockdown or what we've learned, and just give advice to musicians as well. So it's sort of a source for both those things. It's a nice way for Jack and I to catch up, and at the same time we give lots of advice to indie musicians looking to promote their music in like a not soul destroying way and a not completely financially ruining way. Basically, we're trying to give people practical advice that, you know, actually gets them some kind of results, and again helps their mental health a bit. So rather than putting your song into SubmitHub or something and getting 20 declines, I hate it, you should stop, you can actually make connections with some good journalists or people who personally really like your music, and that's more beneficial for you. So it's a lot of stuff in that vein and some social media advice as well. So if that interests you, yeah, Line Check is probably the podcast you want to listen to.
Cool. And sort of tangentially related to what you're talking about in finding all these Scottish musicians and emerging talent, and being from Edinburgh, do you have a recommendation for like good places to, I know we can't do it just now, but for good places to see like emerging artists or emerging artists play?
There's a few so if you're wanting like proper grassroots people trying to find their feet, there is about 1,000 open mics probably. There's a Facebook group called Pressure Valve that's kind of like its own little open mic community, and they do events all over the city, so that's a good thing to look up. Phil Ramsey, if you're wanting bands who are a bit more established and kind of know what they're about, then Sneaky Pete's is a great venue, usually, obviously not now, for it. There's a few others, like Stramash is sort of branching into doing, they usually do cover bands, they're now sort of branching out into doing some more original stuff. So I think earlier in the night, probably like 7 to 9, you can catch an original band probably on a Stramash most nights. They usually do it every night. Other ones, Bohemia sometimes, the one on Waverley, if it's on Waverley Street, that sometimes has original music going, but usually it's kind of more of a, so don't, if you're looking for original music, don't walk in there on like a Friday night, because you'll just see like cabaret dancers and acrobats and drag queens and all this stuff, and it won't be really what you're looking for. They do have a wee cafe off to the side, and before the pandemic, they were putting in like piano acts and acoustic acts in there as well, and a lot of original music there too. I think that's all the places I'd recommend for like live music that's like a nice setup as well. So like good sound is sort of what I'm thinking of as well, because a lot of these places have like one amp and just, you know, you plug in and it sounds awful. I'm thinking of places that have good sound systems, so it'd be Stramash, Sneaky's, Bohemia. Those are my three top places probably at the moment.
Cool. How would you say the Edinburgh music scene kind of differs from elsewhere in Scotland?
I'd say definitely, like I was saying before, the audiences in Edinburgh are a bit more reserved. Like they're very happy to be there, and it's like, it's clearly still a great night out, but it's definitely, there's a bit more distance between you and the audience, or they don't, it's a bit more of a disconnect. Whereas if I played gigs in Glasgow or even like down south, everyone is kind of like mad and up for a good time, and they're all just dancing around, running on the stage, all this stuff, which you wouldn't really see that much in Edinburgh, to be honest. It's a little bit of a gamble if you're going to go with a promoter, because a lot of the promoters ask you to, you know, obviously in like another place to sell a number of tickets before they'll even consider having you on, that kind of thing. But there's been some good opportunities as well. Like there's a particular promoter who asked Jack and I to open for Chris Shiflett, who's like one of the Foo Fighter members. That was a couple of years back now. But there's sometimes you get great opportunities like that. And sometimes you get promoters who ask you to bring the drum kit the night before. You know, it's kind of a gamble sometimes.
Fair enough. It does, by the sense of things, sound as if there's a real sense of community on the scene, though.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. Like, again, pre-pandemic, I might have said no to that because I didn't really have that much of a connection with loads of other bands in Edinburgh, whereas I'd just sort of be like, again, I'm Jack's violinist and Jack's singer, and Jack would all do all the networky stuff, and I'd just go like, right, gotta go to my next thing now. Whereas now I think I'm much more aware of different Edinburgh bands, and if I see like a festival lineup for Edinburgh, I know like 70% of the bands on there now, like with their first name and stuff. So it's pretty cool now to see the community actually opening up and everyone getting to know each other a bit more.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it's going to feel or look kind of post-COVID now that things are kind of opening up again?
I really hope it's a bit less reserved. I really hope it's more like Glasgow a little bit and people are actually, you know, dancing and getting involved and like everyone hugging each other. I'd like to see a bit more of that happening at Edinburgh gigs, I think. And yeah, I want to see more lineups that aren't just like, because something that happened like pre-COVID and happens in a lot of cities is you kind of have like these three bands that you always see gigging, basically these three bands that promoters know will fill a room. I'd like to see more, live sets with like women on the bill. That'd be really cool. We're hoping to do a cover to cover live show at some point that was sort of advocate for more like that, or just a bigger variety of bands on the nights rather than just the only three that you ever see. So yeah, definitely more variety.
I suppose this is probably quite a good opportunity to talk to you a bit more about the cover to cover album.
Mm-hmm.
So from our understanding, the cover to cover album was it was created in response to the underrepresentation of women on kind of streaming services, for example, like Spotify and what have you. You know, the underrepresentation of women in music, especially up-and-coming artists, is ever-present and compounding every year. You know, you pretty much know what you're going to get when you go to Transmit. It's just the same as it seemed to get traipsed out year after year. What do you think needs to happen to improve this issue? And what do you think the audience can do?
The audience, from what I understand, have the power, basically. So the reason why Spotify is such a big deal and why it's so successful is because, you know, people use it. So it's one of those things where the consumers do have the power. I'm not saying everyone's going to switch from Spotify tomorrow, because that's just not going to happen. It's too convenient. It's the easiest app to get music on, unfortunately. There are things that you can do. You can look up some more female-oriented playlists. So there's a bunch of International Women's Day ones that are still up. You can go check them out. There's also their initiative. I think Spotify released some kind of women's space thing on their platform. I can't quite remember the name of it, but it had a bunch of podcasts by women and a bunch of interviews with female musicians on there. So Spotify are doing tiny things. Also, the Spotify playlist has actually had quite a big transformation, which is good to see. We don't know if it's because of the stats that were published and sort of the backlash from it, but it's nice to see. Like, for instance, the cover artist right now is Talia, who's a trans artist from Edinburgh. So that's good to see as well. But consumers, yeah, look up more female artists. It's not like we're hiding them all. They're evidently there. All there. Yeah, they're there. We're just not on your festival lineups or your playlists, but we are there. It's not too hard.
Do you think there are any festivals or venues or promoters that kind of are fighting the good fight and doing everything that they can do?
I would highlight places like Hidden Door, which is coming up, I think, in a few months. That's got a bunch of female creatives that I know personally are doing shows in it. Esther Swift is doing a live show in September. I think she's opening the festival with a project called The Call, which is like this big, we filmed a video of it months ago, but it was just this big open beach space and this orchestral piece. And it's a bit mad, but yeah, she composed the whole thing. She had like flags waving rather than traditional conducting, because she was so far back it had to be like this. So she had that going. So that was a really interesting project to be involved in. And I know Postcode Prom Queen did a show for them. I think a few of my poet friends who are female are doing shows for them. So Hidden Door, I think, would highlight as being a good place to find, you know, creative women and who are trying to, you know, showcase their work basically in this pretty big deal festival, because Hidden Door is pretty established now.
I hope we don't feel as if we're kind of being overly nosy or anything like that.
But no, not at all.
if you've got any kind of personal experiences of kind of discrimination within the music industry.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Right. Okay.
Where do we start?
I'm just thinking back. Where do we start? Well, the thing is, when I was a kid, I wasn't really that aware of it because I was just listening to female singer-songwriters in the car with my dad and like Enya and Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin and all these women who were just leading bands, and like that was kind of normal. Yeah. And then only when I decided to do it, my dad got a bit worried. First of all, he was like, I don't know if this is the right thing for you. Lots of boys play guitar and they play it better than you do, and that kind of chat. So not saying my dad is, you know, a sexist pig. He just said a few things that was like, you should be ready for maybe not the best response to stuff. As I got older, joined bands and went to uni. Unsurprisingly, I did music at Edinburgh Napier, and there was maybe three or four women who weren't there studying singing, if that makes sense. So there was like one female drummer, one female bassist, one female guitarist in my year, I think, and the rest were all either on the singing course or doing something else. Basically, I was the only female composer in my uni group because it was all split up on different things, basically. So that was weird, to be sitting with like six guys and a guy lecturer and just sort of like not really feeling like we really belong here. But actually, as soon as I got into video games, they were a bit easier to talk to, so that was kind of fine in the end. So there was that, and then after uni, joining bands and just sort of again just looking around being like, where are there other women? Like, I don't think I've been shared a stage with another woman very often at all. I can think of one other time, and it was another violinist. So it's just two violinists. Basically, there's not really many women that I've been in a band with that are playing, like, I guess, the male instruments, drums, guitar, and bass. There's not many women doing that. Obviously, there's bands that are all women or are all male, but there's not too much of a crossover, basically. So I'd like to see a bit more of that. In terms of discrimination that's like directly affected me, just very like, the women, if they're listening to this, will just be like, yeah, obviously. So stuff like going into a gig and sort of arming yourself with a cymbal or with an amp just so the bouncer doesn't like stop you and ID you and try and like basically hold you up, because the guys just walk in and it's fine. But if I'm not holding a bit of gear, they'll be like, you're not in the band, basically, is the assumption. There was once where we were doing the sound check for a gig, and the bouncer stormed into the green room and shouted at one of my band members, is she with you? Because, I don't know, I was just sort of having fun dancing on stage whilst we were setting up for the stuff, because what you're supposed to do, you're the singer. And they were going to chuck me out of the venue, basically, because they didn't think I was in the band. And yeah, other stuff, like typical things, like someone will come up and say, really enjoyed your set, and then try and like grab you or like ask for your number in a really derogatory way. Yeah. Just stuff like that. And I know I'm just saying it like it's not a big deal, but that's just because I'm kind of used to seeing it in that tone, if that makes sense. Yeah. If anything, the past few months has taught us that it should be a big deal and it should be taken a bit more seriously. Like nobody's going up to the bassist and trying to hit on him after a set, unfortunately. He's a lovely man, but it's just not happening. But yeah, so those are some examples of discrimination I've faced. And obviously the past year, with the support for Cover to Cover and everything, I would like to think that once we're out of the pandemic, I'll start to see a change happening with live gigs, but I can't really, you know, predict that in my little like bubble and my sort of soundproof prison that I'm in right now. I'm hoping, yes, that will happen after the pandemic.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you do see in venues, you know, they've got the posters saying, you know, this is a safe space and stuff. So, I mean, that's a reasonably new thing, I think. I don't really remember that being a thing when I used to go to bars a lot more often than I do now, and to gigs as well. I don't remember that really being a thing. So I think there's definitely a push happening, but there's definitely still a long way to go there.
Mm-hmm. I think with everything that happened in March, a lot of men sort of started to either recognize like their own behavior, their friends' behavior was being damaging at these like bars and nightclubs and stuff, and sort of going, oh, hang on, I could actually change some stuff here if I stepped in, if my friends, you know, like not harassing, but like hanging around a drunk girl or something, I could actually step in and take him away from that and remove and him from the situation and stuff. So I think this year has been, I'm not a man, I can't say anything. I think it's been a bit of a turning point for guys realizing that this is their problem as well, if that makes sense. It's not just women talking about women issues. It's men's behavior and women's response to it. So they need to be a bit more involved, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think when these things come up, there's always that thing. It's like, is it like sort of 9 out of 10 women have experienced sexual discrimination or in some way, but you flip that on its head and you could equally say 9 out of 10 men have seen that happen or know someone who has committed that sort of, you know, has been involved in that kind of behavior. So
yeah,
it's definitely on men, I think, to do more.
Mm. Sorry, we got really serious there. Sorry, but yeah, I agree.
That's absolutely fine. I think it is just a case of kind of educating yourself, because I think as I get older, I'm more aware of it. Mm-hmm. I think me and Sneds have kind of talked about it before. We're from a very small town in the northeast of Scotland, and it's the older you get, the more you realise how kind of toxic and kind of masculine our kind of upbringing was. And I know that that's something I'm kind of looking into, kind of reading a bit more about kind of gender and what have you. It's knowledge is power, I suppose.
It is, yeah. That's really great to hear. That's good, yeah. Whereabouts in the northeast are you guys?
Keith. We've lost our accents, though.
No, I tuned into an episode. I was like, I think that's near Aberdeen, but I'm not sure.
Yes, it's a bit further north from Aberdeen, but we both lived in Aberdeen for years.
No, there's still a trace of it there, I can tell.
Let's go back to cover to cover then. I mean, I think Grant mentioned what the kind of concept behind the album was. Is there anything you want to expand on?
It came from that realization I have when we're talking about, it's like sexual discrimination in music. I thought about the number of times I shared a stage with a woman and it was like less than 5 or something. And I thought, well, what would happen if we got loads of female artists together to work on a really big musical project and just sort of try to, because if we're never on stage together, then it's very rare that we're actually going to work together at any point. Even if we're all gigging musicians, we're all in separate male-dominated bands, it's very unlikely we're going to actually meet. So that's kind of where it came from. I wanted to see what these women would learn from each other's songwriting styles and, you know, how they'd creatively interpret another woman's work. And since the album, a lot of the women have then gone on to perform like the covers they did of somebody else's stuff, or to, you know, bring some of the ideas from the person who covered them back to the original material and sort of rework it. And a lot of them are now gigging together or live streaming together, and just there's been this wonderful like little cover to cover sort of unit or family formed from the album, which is really, really cool. And the money from the album went to Scottish Women Inventing Music, which is like a big supporter of just more opportunities for women in music. They run workshops and they've got loads of info and research about women in all areas of music. That's from like production to sound engineering to performing to teaching, all of it. So it's a really good organization to be supporting.
Nice. I think the last time I saw it was about £500 you'd raised so far.
Yeah, we're on about 570 now. So that's really, really nice. It's not like absolutely loads, but it's enough to sort of be like, people do care about this issue and people do want to give money to organizations that are helping to change it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned before that it was all kind of done, you know, by email and online and all that kind of stuff. What was it actually like trying to wrangle, you know, these 13 different artists and get them all together and coordinating who covered who and which songs and all that kind of stuff?
So the original idea was myself and sort of co-creator Naomi Head, who we chatted for ages about it, and she said something like, maybe just like 5 or 6 artists would be enough because it's going to be a lot of people and you don't want it to be too long. And I was like, yeah, of course. And then, of course, I've emailed a fair number of female artists who've all then, thinking that nobody would really be that interested because it's, you know, I'm that kind of person where if I have an idea, I'm going to think it's terrible until somebody else validates it, basically. So then they all came back saying they were interested, and suddenly I had 12 other artists who wanted to be part of this. In terms of organizing who covers who, I tried to make it so that it was somebody who was covering a genre that wasn't really theirs. So if it was someone covering an acoustic guitar track, it would be given to an electronic person or a classical person or something like that. So I tried to keep it in that way. And then I decided to make it a chain, so it would go like one band's covering, so X is covering Y, and then Y is covering Z, and it went through like that, which I think helps just the flow of the album as well. So you sort of see where it begins and then goes all the way down to the end, and then you can just do it in a loop. If you, well, don't play in a loop, you'll go mad. But yeah, it can just be a nice sort of linked chain of all the covers. So that was probably the toughest part for me, getting 13 artists to record. They had plenty of time, like about 2 months. Some people got it in really quickly. Some people had tech issues and had to record it like the night before their video came out. It just depended. Everyone's got lives and everyone's busy and that kind of thing. So it just depended on what they wanted to do, really, and the limitations of obviously bedroom recording. So some people have loads of really expensive equipment. Some people have a laptop mic, and I didn't really mind either way. I just sort of wanted them to, yeah, have basically creative freedom to do whatever they wanted with the covers, basically. So that was the most important thing to me. And I definitely didn't want carbon copies of the original song. I definitely wanted their own creativity and their own sound to come to some other person's song, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely comes across on the album. And the flow, the way that it flows, was something that I really enjoyed, in that you could listen to the song by an artist being covered by somebody else, but then you could then hear what that original artist sounded like, and it kind of went along like that. So that was quite a cool way. I think it worked really well as a cool concept.
Thank you.
Did you do any post-production on the songs, or were they just kind of what you received?
I did post-production for one of them. I did them for Penlight's cover of Jen Athan. I did the mixing and mastering for that song because she didn't feel quite as confident doing it herself. So yeah. I just jumped in, and I'm not like a professional mixer or master, but I did a little bit on it. And for some of the other ones, some people were saying there was like a hiss here, or there was something here they didn't like. So I removed a bit of that as well. Didn't do too much else apart from just little like nips and tucks, really. The only one I had any production stuff in was really, well, my own one, the Geffrygeist one, which was the first song on the album, and Pinlight's cover of Jen Athan as well. But the rest of them kind of had their own reign of it. If they wanted any help, they were free to ask, but most of them were able to, yeah, just deal with it themselves and produce some really beautiful stuff.
That opening track, by the way, is just a phenomenal way to like
thank start you.
It's so good.
It's too loud, but apart from that.
It really fills the room, though. Like, it's kind of, I think it's the kind of midway point, the bridge. It's just, yeah, it's such an expansive sound. It's phenomenal.
I think we've tried just doing it through like surround sound speakers. And then obviously when you're playing it out of a phone, it's just like, it's just crushed. It's just so crushed. So yeah, definitely get the surround sound speakers out for that first track. That was stupid of us, but I'm glad you like it. Cause yeah, it's supposed to be this sort of explosion of sound for that middle bit there.
I suppose it's probably quite a good opportunity to talk about, I'm going to mispronounce it. I
can't, right.
Put on this. I don't want to do it because I don't want to embarrass myself. But every time I say it, I feel the need to put on like a German accent.
Ah, guys.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it. But Geffrygeist. Is that
Geffrygeist. That's nice. That's good. Yeah. Well, I think a German person would say Geffrygeist because I think the accent for them is on the R bit of it. But we've had the name for like a year and a half. And we'd be saying Geffrygeist, just like in a horribly Scottish accent. So whatever you want. But it's been really fun since starting to release music, just having DJs try and say it, and it's just hilarious. Because we don't even know what the right pronunciation is, so it's absolutely fine. It's just, it looks good written down, basically, and it sounds nice to go, da-da-da. That's all you want from a name. Geffrygeist or Geffrygeist. Sounds nice either way, so it's absolutely fine.
Am I right in saying it means danger ghost?
Mm-hmm. That's You're cool. right, it means Danger Ghost. It's from a book by a writer called Michael R. Fletcher, who wrote a book called Beyond Redemption. And I think he uses the term or phrase Geffrygeist to mean, I think it was sociopath. I can't really remember the plot of the book too well, but Neil read it and he liked that phrase, not because it meant sociopath, though who knows, maybe he is, but he liked that phrase and he thought that would work for the band's sort of ethereal sound, and it was better than anything else we had as well, so it just kind of stuck after a while.
Cool.
As names often do, they just stick, and that was it.
How did it come about? How did the kind of project come about?
So Neil and I, we're in the same wedding band, as I said before, and the good thing about being in a wedding band is you can just sort of, you spend most of your time driving all over Scotland to go to different venues and stuff, and half the time Neil was driving me and would just play me like music that he was working on at the moment. So it'd just be instrumental tracks with all this like orchestral stuff and all these loud synths and everything that, you know, that is now an integral part of our sound. But back then it was just like instrumental tracks. And I was like, you know, this would be much more popular if I had vocals on it. And he would just like say, no, absolutely not. It's instrumental. It's about the music. And that was it. But I eventually convinced him to let me sing on one of them. So I sent him a demo of some vocals for one of his tracks and he really liked it. Then I put lyrics to it. And then I did vocals for another one they sent me without his permission. And he was annoyed about it. But again, he liked it. And then over the course of like 2 years of like just going back and forth between our flats and stuff and just recording stuff from home, we ended up with like 8 or 9 tracks that were basically finished. Just needed Neil to just say they were finished, basically, which, you know, takes a while if you're working with a producer who's that like perfectionist. But we had about 8 or 9 tracks and I thought, you know what, we should just make this the band, basically just you and me. And he did say yes to that eventually. And I do think that without me coming in like joining Neil, I think all they'd all still be like in his hard drive, not really doing anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I'm definitely the driving force in terms of like actually releasing the stuff and saying, right, that is finished now. We need to, yeah, get that out. So it was kind of, yeah, it's very much a bedroom production, I'd say, for Gift Guys. We've not even played a gig. We have no idea how we're going to play a gig. Not a clue. We'll work it out at some point. But yeah, very much just like kicking about in our different flats, just coming up with ideas and just, yeah, coming up with daft melodies, daft synths, and thinking, yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
I think me and Sneds both really love the sound. Like, particularly kind of Lipstick Queen. I mean, I think you, Sned, said that it sounds a bit like something that you might have expected from the Blade Runner soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly like Parasites as well. Like, I'd kind of thought that it's a bit like Blade Runner, but then also crossed with like Flashdance. There's like that 80s kind of dance sort of song kind of vibe to it, I guess.
No, I get that, yeah. I think, especially with the lyric video as well. I don't know if you guys have caught that, but it's very like the kind of like neon Blade Runner aesthetic. Uh-huh. And I think because Neil wrote the music to it a wee while back and just sort of had this idea of like, right, we're going to do a 4-to-the-floor typical mainstream pop song and it's going to do really well. And he just can't make it that like basically it had to be the big atmospheric thing. So Parasites. Yeah, as soon as I heard it, it reminded me of like Blade Runner or like Drive soundtrack as well. It reminds me a lot of that. Yeah. So it was in that kind of vein. And also Subnautica, if you've played that video game, it's got a very similar sort of very loud synth with like little decorations. Very, very us, basically. Reminded me of all this stuff. And yeah, that's the vibe we went for, basically, with the artwork, with the video, and with the vocals as well. It's quite Flashdance. That I'd never thought of it like that. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's quite a Flashdance melody. Oops. No, it's fine. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it anyway. The 80s nostalgia.
Who made the video?
That was a guy called Lee Waters Lyrics, who I'd sort of seen a few bands work with that I knew. So I asked around just for who they'd recommend for a lyric video. And his name was kicked about. So yeah, you can find him at Lee Waters Lyrics. And he's, yeah, very, very reasonably priced and very good. He was, yeah, really, really excellent to work with.
Cool. So you say you've got about 8 or 9 finished tracks. So can we expect an EP? Anything?
Yeah, we're hoping to do the EP release alongside a gig. So whenever that's possible, we're thinking probably September, maybe, for like an EP launch gig. But the EP itself, maybe a bit sooner. What we're needing to do, because we've got one more single before the EP out, and it's like an A-side, B-side thing, where the A-side is very much sort of what we've heard already, but much slower with like big like classical vocals rather than the sort of poppier ones. It also includes, like, there's a string quartet part in that and also a woodwind trio. So we need to be able to legally record a string quartet and a woodwind trio before we can release it, basically. The bones are all there and it's all finished on the production or electronic production side, but we now need to just add in like live instruments to it. So that's the next step, really. In terms of finishing off the EP. And then the B side of it is much more driven and energetic, and that features a rapper called Conscious Root, who's quite big in Edinburgh at the moment. So he's doing the B side of it, and that's all again been recorded, been sitting for about a year. We just need to get this final bit done in the studio and we'll be sorted. So that's hopefully going to be out probably mid-summer, late summer sort of time for our first EP. And then the other songs, other four or five of them, later. I'll work it out later. Don't know. It'll be around later on.
Have you got a venue in mind for your first gig?
I'd like to do something like Labella and Gel, but it might be a bit too big because we're quite new. So probably I'd like to do something at maybe Biscuit Factory, because that's literally right next door to where I live. So that would be perfect in terms of a load-in. That's fine. And I've seen some really cool like setups there, because it's just a big empty space. So you can just bring whatever you want, really. And I've done a few like DIY gigs there with some other projects. So I think it's a really cool space to do stuff in. In terms of a smaller venue, maybe Opium. I quite like playing Opium. The sound guy is really nice. just like reason. The sound guy Opium.
It's a bit of a smaller
one. Yeah, and it's a bit of a smaller venue. That's pretty much, and it's on Cowgate, which is like, yeah, one of the best sort of areas for like live music, really. And a lot of rubbish music as well, but mainly the live bit is good. So I'd say probably those three.
What about from Fiona Liddell Music? Is there anything that you're working on just for yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I'm sort of, now that Cover to Cover's done, sort of taking a small breather in terms of the big ideas, if that makes sense. Just taking a wee break and getting back into the routine rhythm of like playlists and reviews and like this is the normal stuff. But definitely in summer, I want to start working on another, oh no, my first actually, technically, like a single or like an EP or small EP of like two or three songs that I've had ecking around again, just sort of in the hard drive of my mind for years and years. And I'd like to use some of the artists from Cover to Cover and try and see if I can make it like this, like all female projects, and get everyone in the studio to record like two or three of my own songs. I think that would be probably my next vanity project. I'd like to do later on, but for now just doing a breather and just sort of trying to promote other people's music just on my channel for now.
It sounds like you could do with a breather. I mean, you've got so many kind of things going on at once. Like how do you actually find the time to kind of do all of these things?
Have a really good diary. Like whenever any date comes up, it goes straight in there and that's it. And I trust that diary just with everything, basically. That's what's happening that day. There's quite a lot of times where I'll like wait till like 10 o'clock and I'm like, what have I got on tomorrow? And open up, it's like eight things. And I'm like, oh, cool. It's that. Cool. Great. I'm good at organizing it now with like little breaks. So I teach as well. Like I do vocal and violin lessons, and that's always got like a half hour in between lessons just so I can sort of, yeah, take a break and eat something. And then,
important.
Yeah, it's important to eat something. And yeah, just try and stop at a reasonable time. So like I fell into a bit of a trap with like Geffer Guy's first single, Graceless, where I was just sort of waking up, getting on a laptop, doing promo, doing teaching, doing everything else, and not switching off until like 11 at night. And that set me in a bit of a hole, like energy-wise and mental health-wise, of just never really being off. So I always try and finish up everything I do before like, at the very latest, 9. Come on, it should be 9. You're done. You're starting at 10 in the morning. You should be done by 9. So that, and also just taking more just days off to, yeah, like actually putting in the calendar, like day off. So like nothing else can go in that day. Even if someone's like really like, if there's no other day, that's the day off. And that's just like a sacred thing that you can't mess with, if that makes sense. So yeah, taking time for yourself in between everything is super important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you need, like, you can just burn out. You need time to just, even just a rest.
Just a wee rest. I'd say probably not having kids also helps me be able to do all these things. Later on, it might be a bit harder. But yeah, for now, yeah.
But as Ned was saying, it was very much like going down the, you know, when we're kind of researching on yourself and your music and your work, it was very much like going down the rabbit hole. It was just like all these things popped up. I was like, geez, oh.
It's a lot of stuff. I'm quite fortunate, I think, like that many opportunities like I just happen to know a lot of really cool and active people, I think, in the community who needs either a violist or a singer or a songwriter or something that I can do to help them or just collaborate with them in some way. So I think I'm just really fortunate, and luckily I've got the teaching to sort of actually pay the bills, and in between that can do all this other fun stuff as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I used to do the 9-to-5 thing and also try and do all this stuff, and that was impossible, so this is much better, I think. Yeah.
Right. When did you make the decision to just focus on the kind of music?
That was, I want to say, the end of 2017. I've been working at a call center for about 2 years, and I was still in the wedding band, so it was like every Friday, Saturday out somewhere, and maybe in the northeast of Scotland, gigging and doing a wedding, and then coming back and just working like 6 days a week. And again, it got to the point where I was like, I can't really do this anymore. Like, I've got a fair amount of money saved up. I can at least, you know, quit my job and survive for, let's say, like 3 months. If I make no money, I can still pay everything with 3 months. So that's when I thought, that's a really good safety net. I think I can actually turn this into my real job. Like, the teaching part, I think I can make that my real job, and the wedding band, and chuck this other place. So that's when I decided to go for it. It wasn't like a really like snap decision. I've been planning it for a wee while, because I was saving all this money just to make sure that if I did fail, I wouldn't be like, my life wouldn't be completely ruined. I had to have some kind of financial backing basically before I made that jump. But it's always something that I sort of wanted to do and like had a notion of doing, of being like a vocal and violin teacher and having the time to do all the other crazy stuff that I wanted to do. But it wasn't till I had a good financial like security blanket under me, which I was very fortunate to get, that I was actually able to do that. So I'd say I'm quite privileged, and it was definitely like a planning thing. It wasn't like a right, I'm out of here sort of thing. Throw down the headset and just leave and never look back.
I don't know why it popped into my head the scene from Office Space where they all kick the shit out of the printer.
I don't know
why that kind of popped into my
That's
head.
That's what would have happened to me if I'd stayed there, probably. Just kick the shit out of some poor plant pot or fax machine. Just, you're not relevant anymore. No, it was a good enough job, but it was just a time drain a bit. And I wanted to spend my time doing, stuff to do with music and stuff I actually enjoyed. So I don't think it was a bad decision.
Yeah, no, it's cool that you're doing that, living the dream.
Mm-hmm. For now, anyway. No, it's really fun. Definitely much happier, not being at a job that takes up half my life and that I've got no interest in, basically. It's nice to, have that freedom to just, focus on doing the fun stuff. And it's also probably why I can fit so much of it in, is because I like it all. If I did mass for a living and everyone was asking me to do mass as like a side hustle, I probably wouldn't like it as much. Just thinking of the thing I don't like the most, it's maths.
Nobody likes maths.
No. My mum was a maths teacher.
Oh, was she?
Really say that, I hated maths. But if I was doing that full time, I'd probably be miserable.
Yeah. Well, there is a saying, isn't there? Like, if you enjoy your work or if you enjoy what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that's really good. And if you can find a job that can incorporate at least some of the stuff you really enjoy doing, then, you're one of the lucky ones. A lot of people have jobs that are just, they're exactly what the definition of a job is. It's just there for like financial reasons and just to sort of fill the time. So I feel quite lucky to know exactly the area I want to work in and be able to just, explore different avenues with it every day rather than sort of sitting at a desk calling somebody about a pair of socks that hasn't turned up or whatever it is. This is way better. Way, way better. Look back along the road we've traveled down. The place where I was raised. I was raised. Free. Now you're free.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, Fiona? Just discuss?
Yeah, I can give you. I was wondering what your sort of favourite Scottish acts are at the moment for you guys, because I'd like to sort of know about that. And I'm always looking for more Scottish musicians to plug or to get into or to harass by promoting them. So if you've got any Scottish acts you like, I'd be up for hearing about that.
I have a problem where that I don't have a ton of Scottish acts, even though I live in Edinburgh and. Just by the nature of the sort of stuff I listen to, a lot of it's like American bands and English there's a lot of heavier music. But there's a cool band, they're called Dune with a V, and they're like a sort of progressive metal band, and they're doing some really cool stuff at the moment.
Okay. You might like a band called Segale. I think they're from Inverness, and it's like a one-man atmospheric metal band. And it's Sgaile, and they've got loads of stuff on Spotify that you can check out. Or I think they've got a Bandcamp as well, but that sounds kind of up your street if you like your heavier stuff, I'd say.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's what I'd recommend for you. Grant, anyone?
You really put me in the spot, to be honest.
Sorry.
I don't have anybody. I think it is a case of, if it's in your back garden, you don't really notice it as much. So I think I do need to make more of a kind of concentrated effort to kind of listen to more Scottish artists. We're quite lucky that we're getting more submissions now that the podcast has been up and running for a little while now, so we are getting a bit more submissions from Scottish artists, which has been quite good. But I'm kind of similar to Sneds. My kind of wheelhouse was punk. I used to always listen to punk and alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So it is mostly American and English bands I listen to, unfortunately.
Yeah,
we got that submission. We're reviewing it on this the podcast that's coming up. An Aberdeen band called Seas.
Oh, Sea Stars! They were fantastic.
Yeah, okay. They're post rock, with a bit of alt rock and shoegaze in it. It's
oh, pretty nice. What was it called? Sorry, again.
Seas Starry.
Seas Starry. Thank you. Cool. I'll check that one out.
And their EP's called Anatomy.
Cool. I'll check that out then. That'll be good. Okay. Thanks for that. I think for both you guys, a good place to start is probably just checking out the other artists on Cover to Cover, because they've all got massive discographies and stuff they've already released. In terms of shoegaze stuff, maybe... Ooh. Postcode Prom Queen, have you heard their stuff yet?
Well, yeah.
Or outside of the album, yeah.
Because as a result of kind of listening to the album, I've, went to follow yourself, I've went to follow... Pinlight, School Prom Queen, and there was another Saria
as well. Really, I like her stuff.
Loved all of their stuff from the album. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. And that's the thing. I probably wouldn't have heard of them if it wasn't for cover. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. Yeah, we wanted to also help these artists reach a bigger audience with this sort of collab thing, and the only way to do that was to sort of badger good folk like yourselves and the Scotsman and everybody else, look at this thing, it's great. So I'm glad that the artists have managed to gain a bigger audience because of it.
Yeah, and Grant said, it's fantastic that there's all these artists that we wouldn't have heard otherwise that we've had the opportunity to hear. And we're always, we're always trying to encourage people to send us music, and we try and listen to everything that people send us. But there's so much music nowadays.
Aye.
So many people doing it that it's so hard to decide what to actually listen to sometimes.
I think a lot of the time, we were having on my own podcast on Linecheck, we were talking to a guy called Luke Knowles, who also runs a music podcast, and we were talking about how the same sort of thing, how hard it is to sort of pick what you're going to listen to. I think he made a really good point. He said that, if I'm into a song and it's I'm a minute in and I'm not really fully engaged with it, then it's not that it's, a bad song. It's just not something I can personally have a connection with. So I'm trying to bring that to my own submissions now, because my inbox, probably like you guys, is full of bands sending me stuff. And I'm trying to bring that same sort of... not rule, but if I'm listening to a song and I don't feel that feeling you get when you hear a song you really like, then it's probably a good song. It's just not something that I'm going to plug, if that makes sense. So if you can make that sort of judgment, I think you'll maybe have an easier time. I don't know. But again, it's so difficult because you don't want to disappoint people and there's so many submissions and all that. But yeah, if you can pick the stuff that you really have a passion about, you're probably going to have a better time, I would say.
Yeah. Just another couple of bands that have just popped into my head.
All right.
So the Sea Starry.
Mm-hmm.
We covered them in the most recent podcast. Voldo as well.
Oh, of
Voldo,
course.
Okay.
Voldo there in Ayrshire.
How would you describe Voldo, Grant?
How did I describe Voldo? I probably came up with some highfalutin nonsense. I can't remember. They're very 90s sounding anyway.
Oh, nice. I like the 90s. Okay. Voldo. Cool.
It's a three-piece, isn't it? Three-piece band from Ayrshire.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like
male use a lot of samples
with like samples and beats, and there is like a there's like a sort of 90s almost Fatboy Slim and like
nice
kind of aspect to that, but it's very hard to pin down.
Yeah, I'll get you that as well. It sounds right up my street, the 90s so, sample thing. Yeah,
so the album was called, was it Sophia?
Yeah, Sophia.
Okay.
Sophia. It's quite a long album. I think there's like 19 tracks on it. Because I remember it's kind of not a criticism as such, but we did see like perhaps if it was a bit shorter, it might be.
You
could
make that two albums, surely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff
stretch
on
it.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of kind of touch on quite a few different kind of influences. I can't quite remember the name of the song, but it kind of references an old Bob Dylan song from the North Country.
Love that song.
Touches on that, and they kind of put their own spin on it. I think I think it might be a bit of dog, or there's a dog that features.
Oh,
there's a kind of healthy dose of kind of humour in a lot of the tracks. Slippery Trash Mouth from Livingston, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I've seen that name, but I don't know if I've listened to them.
So he's a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to remember the name of his record company. He's got his own record company.
What's it called? Speak Sleazy Records. So he's he's a rapper, and then it's like, again, it's almost like 90s hip hop beats over a very, very Scottish raps.
I'm like, coming around to it West now. I wasn't huge before, but like the Scottish accent in rap doesn't throw me as much as it does, as it used to, sorry. So I'm coming around to Scottish rap much more now, I think, which is cool.
It's good. I've never been a huge kind of rap and R&B fan, but we kind of recently covered, well, in the last podcast, we covered Armand Hammer, and before that, we covered kind of Rap Ferreira, two American artists, and they kind of changed my opinion on kind of rap, as did kind of Trashmouth stuff. And I thought that it was quite cool to hear people singing or rapping in kind of Scottish colloquialisms, so saying instead of stuff like that. And I think the way even his name is spelled is how we would pronounce it. So
Slippery or something. I don't know.
Well, mouth is spelled M-O-U-F.
Right, mouth. Okay.
Which is how we would probably pronounce it, I would have said. And he's quite similar to, or I thought there were similarities between an Irish band that we covered and kind of listened to called Kneecap, who are, I think there's three of them in there as well. It's kind of two singers, and I think there's another guy that kind of provides the music and the beats and the instrumentation and what have you.
Yeah.
And they sing in a combination of English and Irish.
Oh, nice. I don't
speak Irish, but it sounds...
No, but... It sounds beautiful, though, right?
Yeah, it's really good. The most recent track that released was called Mum. Mom. And then that was released towards the end of last year.
Okay, I'll check them out as well.
That's really good, yeah.
The other band that I sort of recommend in the Scottish rap thing would be, this might be an obvious one, but Stanley Odd. I really like their recent album that came out called Stay Odd. That's full of like a combination of colloquialisms from Scotland, like loads of them, some really nice political messages. What am I saying? There's some really interesting political messages throughout it as well. So I definitely recommend Stanley Odd as well.
Cool,
awesome. All right. Well, I think we've pretty much asked you everything we wanted to. Cool. So That was great. Do you want to just kind of say, you know, where can people find you and all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, so you can find me on everything as Fiona Liddell Music. You can follow Local Heroes playlist on Spotify. I've got a full website now for submissions, so if you want to submit your music, you can do so via fionaliddell.com. My band's called Geffergeist. I was thinking it's just spell it, or will people be able to figure that out? Probably should spell it. Geffergeist. And that's, again, Geffergeist everywhere, if you can be our spelling it or Googling it. And yeah, I think that's everything. Oh, I forgot to say, actually, I'm starting a radio show of Scottish music from my Local Heroes playlist, and that's debuting next Monday. It's coming out next Monday, and it'll be like every second last Monday of the month on In Your Ears Music. So if you want to hear me be a terrible DJ, that's where you can find it.
Sounds nice. Good.
So what's In Your Ears Music then?
It's like an online radio station. It's a not-for-profit radio station that sort of showcases, again, just underground artists. It's mainly, from what I can gather, it's mainly like north of England sort of base. So a lot of the DJs are from that kind of area. There's a lot of Newcastle DJs on it. But they approached me asking to do, like, the original idea was like for just female artists, but I thought this would be a nice tie-in for the whole Scottish music scene, the tiny corner I'm involved in, to bring it to like, yeah, Northern English audience who are listening. They're mainly like, I think their audience is mainly like engaging on Twitter, and they do like live tweets of all the shows and that kind of thing. So it's very much like, again, a very community-based internet radio show.
Cool. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, hopefully it should be fun. We'll see if I'm any good at it.
Cool. All right. Well, that was fantastic, Fiona. Thanks so much.
No worries. It's been really fun. It's been good to chat to you guys about it as well.
Yeah, it's been brilliant talking to you. Mm-hmm. I never know how to kind of.
We never know how to end it, do we?
I never know how to end them either. It's so like, yeah, like if I'm ever one having to do the outro, it's just like, and I guess that's it, right?
That's us.
I'll just kind of wave. Have a good time, everyone. Yeah. It's really awkward. No, don't worry at all. I've had a great time. It's been a great chat. Thank you both for having me on. It's been wonderful.
Same to you.
Yeah.
It's not finished. It's finished.